Welcome to the free version of Sunday night's main event. Remember, this show is crowdfunded. So if you like what you hear, please subscribe to our Patreon. It's only $4 a month. That's only $1 a week. And not only do you get a commercial-free and extended version of this show each and every week, along with that, you get 4 other podcasts per week. It's all at patreon.com/snmeradio. That's patreon.com/snmeradio. Check it out. We appreciate your support.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Raw Underground, a retribution invasion, and AEW's deadly draw. Some would say when the product gets worse, our show gets better. And if that's the case, then get ready for a great show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday Night's Main Event, Canada's premier wrestling radio program, where we focus on sports entertainment. I'm your tour guide, Jason Agnew, and this week's program, I'll recap the wrestling news of the week before taking a deeper dive with Dave Meltzer, presenting a birthday bliss edition of Turnbuckle Trivia, and spend the second hour dissecting our weekly wrestling consumption with one of our old pals, Joe Aguinaldo. Oh, and also slid into the mix tonight, I welcome back a friend of this show, a pro wrestler who loves to challenge the boundaries of the art of pro wrestling and may be accomplishing more by not wrestling during the pandemic than anyone else in the industry, RJ City. So with all of that good to go, let's roll into it and get you caught up on this week in wrestling news.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Well, the week kicked off with some unexpected and rather bizarre news as a group led by Dwayne The Rock Johnson purchased the assets of the XFL for approximately $15 million hours before an auction in bankruptcy court was set to begin. The deal, brokered by XFL President Jeffrey Pollock, is expected to be approved by the court on August 7th and close on August 21st. Now, Johnson's ex-wife and business partner Danny Garcia is also an investor, while Johnson and Redbird Capital's Jerry Cardinale are each equal investors, splitting the $15 million investment. In Wednesday night ratings news, Dynamite was up 16.6% in total viewers, averaging 901,000 viewers. NXT was also up 6.5%, averaging 753,000 viewers. Those are pretty damn good ratings for this era, and surprising stats considering the return of Major League Sports this week as well. Speaking of such, the NBA playoffs are going to cause some major schedule headaches for AEW. The Wednesday, August 19th episode of Dynamite will air on Saturday, August 22nd at 6 p.m. Eastern. Yes, that is the same night as NXT TakeOver 30, and there will be crossover. On top of that, the Wednesday, August 26th episode of Dynamite will air whenever the NBA games are done that night, with another new episode to air on Thursday, August 27th at 8 p.m. Eastern, meaning 4 new hours of AEW on TNT in 2 days. Along with that, the Wednesday, September 16th episode will air Thursday, September 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern. TNT will also air the countdown to All Out at 10 p.m. on September 2nd. Oh, AEW, more is more. Do I have to start using that for you guys as well? Generally, if you look at this, it's not AEW's fault. The only thing I can kind of fault them for is putting in that second couple new hours of AEW on TNT on August 27th for, geez, I don't know. No reason? Weird. A few contract notes. MVP announced a new deal with WWE. He announced this on his Instagram, saying it was multi-year, and MVP is going to be in the Hurt business for the foreseeable future. And it is official. Vicky Guerrero did an interview this week on Fansided, saying she'd signed a contract with AEW. And a name that I brought up on this program numerous times, Rachel Ellering, will be a part of AEW Dark this week. Rachel is the daughter of Road Warriors manager Paul Ellering, and she most recently wrestled in WWE as Rachel Evers. That name is an ode to her trainer, Lance Evers, a.k.a. Lance Storm. No word yet if she'll be a part of the Deadly Draw tournament, but you know, after watching it, might be best that she isn't. We'll talk about that in the second hour when I'm joined by Joe Aguinaldo. Excalibur, who was missing on AEW commentary this week once again, he will return on the August 26th edition of Dynamite. AEW officially announced Heels on Wednesday, a paid online subscription service geared toward female wrestling fans. Now, according to the website, which you can find at alleliteheels.com, for $49 a year, members receive access to a variety of features, including virtual meet and greets, video conference discussions and industry experts, exclusive AEW talent Q&A sessions, customized merchandise, special promotions, theme parties, and more. The secure space enables AEW Heels members to connect, learn, and thrive together through shared passions for women's wrestling. Oh boy, Jim from Virginia, probably very upset that he's not allowed. Actually, is he allowed? Are men allowed in this? I don't even know. How do you have something that is just geared to female fans? Can guys sign up? Strange. In the press release, they announced an event for this Friday, which will include a Q&A with referee, podcaster, and front office worker Aubrey Edwards, a social media strategy session with Brandi Rhodes. Brandi Rhodes is doing a social media strategy session? Oh boy. And a session on respect and empowerment in the workplace by Keisha N. Gray, who's a partner at Proskauer Law Firm. So this is very funny because a social media strategy session with Brandi Rhodes was offered up. And let me give you a follow-up news little tidbit on this. Brandi Rhodes then promptly quit Twitter after people complained about her AEW Heels project. Boy, that's just a tough go. To keep with the business side of things, a couple bits of executive news here. Nick Khan, no relation to Tony, has been hired as WWE's new president and chief revenue officer, announced by the company on Wednesday morning. Nick Khan was the co-head of the TV division of the Creative Arts Agency and was the driving force behind negotiating WWE's new TV deals in 2018. Yeah, so he made them a lot of money. He reportedly is leaving the company on good terms. Khan will report directly to Vince McMahon, and is taking over the roles of Michelle Wilson and George Berrios, both of them that they held before they parted ways with WWE earlier this year. So get this, two men named Khan are in charge of the two largest wrestling companies in North America. I can't wait for someone to text or email the wrong person. This will be fascinating. Also in TV land, Kevin Riley is out at Warner Media. The reason why this is related to wrestling is because he was one of the main executives that greenlit AEW Dynamite and made it one of his pet projects for Warner. Now, Casey Bloys and Ann Sarnoff have been promoted to oversee TNT content. There is a bit of a wrestling crossover with Bloys, as he was the president of HBO programming and went to Freedom High School, or Freedom High, that is, in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. That's the same time Dwayne Johnson was there. He also greenlit Ballers for Johnson. At least Johnson starred in that. They two were not friends in high school, though. So there you have it. There's that link. But not great that the guy who championed AEW at TNT is no longer in a place of power and actually no longer in the company. And one final note. I'm sure you probably saw this week. I was getting text messages from people who aren't even wrestling fans or who are lapsed fans because for some reason, Marty Jannetty confessed to being a murderer and now police are looking into it. So, police in Columbus, Georgia, apparently told TMZ they're going to be looking into a claim Margie Jannetty decided to make and then delete on his Facebook that he killed a man when he was 13 years old. Jannetty said that when he was of that age, he worked at a bowling alley, was buying marijuana from a man who took him out back of the building with the intention of sexually assaulting him, and then he quote-unquote said, "That was the first time I made a man disappear." He said they should have looked in the Chattahoochee River. Before continuing to ramble about a Jamaican woman he was in love with, I mean, Jannetty is 60. The alleged incident apparently happened in 1973. Police are now checking their records for missing persons. Clearly, Marty's brain has never fully recovered from being kicked through the barbershop window. We'll leave it at that. When we come back, we will not ask Dave Meltzer about that report. Instead, there's so much news to talk about, so we will do so. Dave Meltzer joins me next. Keep in mind, RJ City still to come. Joe Aguinaldo in hour two. It's Sunday night's main event. We thank you for listening on TSN Radio.
Only when light is combined with the dark is the universe perfect and complete. Like a hypnotizing drumbeat heard deep within the swampy shores, a bubbling kettle brews. She engages your spirit, sending ripples across the surface of your soul. Allow her sacred science and divine state of consciousness to unveil your contact point toward complete clarity. Cosmically grounded, she is all at once every element, fueling the nectar of your memory, drip by velvety drip. Ascending from the mist, Haze Mama breaks in balance while granting an alternative perception, otherwise unavailable, unless by virtue of her wondrous alchemy. Shh. Haze Mama New England IPA, available year-round for only $3.50. Great Lakes, brewed for you, Ontario.
It's time! For the Wrestling Observer Insider. Guess who's back. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event, getting a little bit more in-depth on the news with the man who is the key to wrestling news, the editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer. Dave, I have a whole bunch of questions about things that I don't even know if you're going to answer this week, because what a mess WWE plays like on television, and I guess it's the same backstage.
It was really disorganized backstage Monday and Tuesday when they did their tapings. Yeah, I mean, like Tuesday, they were supposed to take two shows, and they only taped one because they didn't have enough for this. They were be too disorganized, essentially, and too lacking in talent to do two shows.
Well, yeah, so, and even Dave,
that's probably why we had so much time devoted to Sheamus and Corbin, I think.
On top of that, if you look at that Stephanie McMahon segment, Stephanie's footage wasn't ready. That was put in afterwards in post. It was pretty clear.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah. And that was a key part of the show, in theory. Yeah.
Yeah. What a mess. Okay, well, let's start with Monday. First of all, Shane McMahon returns to television, Raw Underground. How long has this been in the works for, or is it a matter of like 48 hours we flew Shane and we needed to do something?
I know that it was in the works on the Thursday before. That was the first it was brought up. So the Thursday prior to Monday, when, you know, which would be, you know, and they may have talked about it as early as Tuesday. You know, it's essentially a reaction to the ratings of the show where you had to, the Drew title match, or was supposed to be a title match, and then the Asuka title change, and then the number came out, and it's like, oh, we need to change fast, you know. And actually, it was not a reaction to the investors' call, because it was discussed right before at the meeting, right before the investors' call. But the investors' call probably would have sped that up, because that was a real key thing, because it's the first time the investors at one of those calls were just like, not, you know, every now and then someone would bring up ratings, it's come up, but this was three different investors going, what's going on with these ratings? You know, when are they going to get back up? What's going on? And that's a different kind of pressure than Vince has ever seen.
Now, we can't judge ratings by 1 week, but I did hear you talk about the teenage ratings on Monday, and it was a drastic change from what happened the week before.
Huge, yeah. Yeah, the week before, after in hour three, which would be, the Asuka and Sasha Banks match and the McIntyre-Ziggler match, teenagers dropped a ridiculous amount. Teenage girls, but teenage boys and girls both were just, people turned off that third hour. And this week, which I presume is due to the Raw Underground, they were way up in hour three. They grew in hour one, to hour two and to hour three, which rarely happens. So the curiosity over the Raw Underground absolutely helped younger ratings. I mean, whether you thought the segment sucked or it didn't suck, that's immaterial. The fact is that the curiosity was there. Now, that doesn't mean that it was good. Some people are saying, well, it proves it's good. No, it proves that people were curious. If it stays this way for a month, then it proves that it's working. I mean, if it's, a lot of things you try and people are curious, that doesn't mean that, the jury will be out. You don't learn everything in 1 week, but it was a staggering difference. Yes.
Okay, so looking at Raw Underground before we get to Retribution here, Shane shows up. He's got this weird Fight Club type thing. It's Brawl for All, but it's still fake. And then the Hurt Business comes in. They take over. I'm going to ask what the end game is here, but I'm assuming there is no end game and there's no plan.
I have no idea. I mean, I think they're just throwing stuff at the wall and trying to see something that sticks, because they know they have to make changes. And so everyone's throwing out ideas for changes. And this was one of the ideas. Some ideas will work and some ideas will fail, and time will tell.
Retribution shows up on Raw, blows something up or whatever. And then on SmackDown, Dave,
what's so bad about that is they blow this thing up to cause the power failure. The power failure is there from the beginning of the show at 8.
Yeah.
But when they show up to blow it up, it's pitch blackout.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like how, they don't, that was a constant. It's funny, I was talking to somebody who worked for TNA, okay, which tells you this. And I was going through this thing, and they go like, you have no idea how many discussions on a weekly basis we would have so that type of stuff doesn't happen. And it's like, how in this giant company with 50 writers does somebody not say, we have to tape this? It's like, when can we tape this so it fits with the storyline? If it's a thing before the show, it's got to be light out. If it's a thing that's going to be late in the show, we have to tape it the night before when it's dark. And it's like, how is this company with 50 writers make a mistake like this?
Yeah. On top of that, you look at SmackDown, I felt embarrassed for the company watching, and for anyone that is under those masks watching whatever that was. It was horrendous.
Yeah, it was worse than minor league wrestling, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I do. I completely do, because there's also a higher expectation.
I was watching it, and I felt like, this is worse than a really bad indie angle. So, what can you say? It's, again, they have an idea. The execution has been terrible so far.
What are the, I've heard some names bandied about, Dijakovic, Ciampa. Who's looking at being under these masks? Have you heard names?
I have no idea, but no? It certainly wasn't. There was certainly no Dijakovic out
no.
there.
No! What is...
These guys are 5'6", he's 6'5".
Yeah, everyone is super small. And I mean, I don't mean to be the...
And there's clearly one woman, because when they beat up... It was interesting, when they beat up the one woman in the studio... They had to have a woman, even though she's covered from head to toe, they had to have a woman, and she had to take off enough of her mask or whatever
to know.
See the back of her hair.
Yeah.
So everyone knew it was not a guy beating up a girl. It was really interesting how careful they were with that spot.
Yeah, I felt like with that hair, I feel like that could be Vanessa Bourne. under there, but I'm not sure.
I was outright told that the people under the mask are not the people who will be playing the character.
Really?
So it could end up being Dijakovic. It's just that, you know, he obviously wasn't one of those guys this week.
Oh, that is so bad, though, considering that, I mean, they just looked so small. And I hate to be that guy that says you look so small in wrestling because it's not really a thing. But in this particular angle, they looked incredibly tiny. And their suits were not flattering whatsoever in the hoodies. They look like the ninjas.
No, they did look like the ninjas. Yeah, you know, it's like it's a bunch of guys who are like the, you know, again, the size of the Singh brothers, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, moving along. Bayley challenging the winner of a tri-brand battle royal for SummerSlam. Interesting they're doing this to me by setting it in place that it's a tri-brand battle royal as opposed to doing some sort of qualifying match. You're looking at someone from another brand. Is it perhaps a bump from NXT?
As soon as I saw that, my thought was Rhea Ripley. Now, I mean, again, I haven't talked to anyone. I'm just throwing a name out. But I was going like, who would you put?
Yeah.
Over in that battle royal, if you were in charge. And I mean, it was not like a no-brainer to me. Rhea Ripley, because she's kind of been abused in the booking, but she's got, you know, a character. She's got, you know, it would be something where people would, like, talk about it. You know, if it's like Lacey Evans, you know, who's going to talk about it? She's going to be whatever. So I don't know that they're thinking it, but that was my thought.
Yeah, I think that that's an appropriate person, except she's now found herself wrapped up in a semi-comedy angle with Robert Stone and got attacked by Mercedes Martinez. So it looks like they're headed towards that for TakeOver 30. So unless she's doing double duty, which I suppose she could.
She can do double duty. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah. You know, your thing may be why they don't do it, which is a pretty bad reason. But they easily could say that exactly thing is like, well, she's already booked against Mercedes Martinez, so let's have whatever. I mean, who can you put in there that's going to be? I mean, I guess there's people, you know, but I'm just trying to think of someone that's going to like make a difference. And there's really not that many. Like, you know, they could always have Naomi win because of, you know, Twitter, but you know that's been done before.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I would think with tribe when you say tribe brand, the only reason to do that is to have an NXT woman win.
That's how
I would look at it.
Yeah, I agree. Unless you get an unexpected return. I know Mickie James has been sitting on the sidelines, but that also feels like repeat programming.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's, you know, she's been ready to go for a long, long time. So,
yeah.
You know, I suppose you could do that. But you know, they don't, you know, ever since Mickie James came back, they just had decided that she's not worth pushing. I don't know why. You know, but it's, you know, they just make these decisions. Sometimes they'll bring people back from the past and they'll go like crazy with them. And sometimes they'll bring people back from the past and just go, well, you know, they're just here to put people over. And whether they get over or not. I mean, and sometimes it changes like with Jeff Hardy. I mean, if you remember when the Hardys were brought in, you know, they got that big pop and they got that title run. And then they spent the next year just putting people over, even though they were really over.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually it became like, God, we got so few people over and Jeff Hardy's over. I guess we got to push him.
Yeah. And well, it's questionable as to what they're doing with him now. But with Matt on the other show, I'm not surprised that they're doing this to him now.
Yeah.
Dexter Lumis removed from the five-way, causing a huge booking issue on NXT. Simply illogical. But what is the story with Dexter Lumis?
He injured his ankle when he did that flip over the top, and so he's not going to be ready. So that's what that is. It was not a planned angle or anything like that.
And it's not COVID, which is different at this point.
No, it's not. I know a lot of people, you know, those things have popped up a lot in WWE, but it's not COVID.
On the AEW side of things, Kevin Riley, a name that most people don't know, he's out at Warner Media. He was someone that championed AEW on TNT. This can't be good news for the company. But on the other hand, Dave, AEW's ratings were very good this week. How do you think this positions them in the world of Warner?
It is absolutely impossible to even guess because I don't know the people that are in. And if they come in, you don't know the attitude. I mean, it's like even if it's successful, you don't know. I mean, they're under contract So it would take a lot, because essentially you have to buy out the contract, and I don't think they're going to do that. I think that they're pretty safe for the next, you know, 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, will they be promoted as heavy as under Riley? Time will tell. I mean, you know, Riley, you know, there's a reason there were a lot of ads during NBA games for Dynamite, and that has helped the company.
Right.
There's a reason that there was a lot of PR for it. Well, whether that will continue or not, I don't know. You know, time will tell. You know, management change, you just don't know. And the people in charge, the two people in charge, have no background or anything to do with pro wrestling. So you don't know what they're going to think. They may just look at the ratings. And you know, there's real positives with AEW in the sense of their audience is much younger than the audience at TNT. They're one of their stronger shows, except for the NBA, as far as with the, you know, the younger audience. You know, viewers per home, tremendous. People watch together. So there's really good signs with AEW, but that doesn't mean that someone's going to come in and just go, you know what, we're TNT drama. What do we have wrestling on for? And then you got to convince them, well, it's not, you know, low rent. You know, you just never know. And again, at the end, it's going to be, they're probably going to be on until 2024. And at that point, if their ratings, you know, stabilize and stay at this level or grow from this level, they're probably safe. But, you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things that are going on in the world. How can we predict 2024?
That is definitely a ways away. One thing with AEW, though, they've been steady in their spot on Wednesday nights, but there is quite the shuffle coming up due to the NBA, which is TNT's one of their primary properties.
It's their primary property.
I'm curious as to what the decision-making process was with AEW doing that one week where they're going to come on right after the NBA and then being on Thursday nights as well and producing new programming. I hate to say more is more on their part as well.
Yeah, it's. I think that the idea may be that the Wednesday night show, because of the NBA lead-in, you're going to get people who don't normally watch. You know, it's like new people that wouldn't necessarily watch, and because of that, you know, it's valuable to do that. And then the Thursday is just a way to give them their 2-hour show. Well, you know, it's going to make a difference. They're going to take, you know, it's not creature's habit. What we're going to learn is, especially on the Saturdays, the week they do the Saturday, which is head to head with Takeover,
yeah,
and UFC,
yeah.
We're going to find out how loyal that audience is if they, because they, you know, they're doing the Saturday 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock time slot. That's a very unique time slot, and if they can do, you know, 600,000 viewers in that time slot, that's a real feather in their cap. I don't know that they will, but that would tell people that, like, wow, their audience is loyal. So it's like, you know, it's going to hurt them a little bit as far as the continuity on Wednesday, and it will absolutely give NXT a boost. But this was always going to happen. You know, I mean, there was always going to be NBA playoffs, and it was always going to be the priority. And it's going to happen every single year.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened, you know, if you remember, it happened in the Nitro era, too. The exact same thing. And did it hurt? Yeah, it does hurt. But in the long run, you know, for a month and probably for the 2 weeks after this, so probably through the mid, you know, August, September, it's going to be, you know, a little bit of a whatever. It's going to be a little bit lower. And then come October, it's going to be right back to normal. So it's just, you just got to look at the numbers for what they are. You know, if you're going to go like, the numbers down, oh, they're failing. It's like, you know, you don't get it, but that's fine. And if the numbers are steady, that would be incredible.
Yeah, it definitely would. All right, Dave, one more question. Hey, Rey Mysterio's contract, what's happening every week?
He's staying. Is the contract signed? I don't know.
Okay.
He's staying.
All right.
He ain't going anywhere. So that's a done deal. He, you know, there was an offer from AEW, and, you know, there you go. He decided to stay with WWE. WWE offered more dates. The money per date was pretty much identical, but mm-hmm. WWE offered more dates. And I think that, you know, again, Dominic's in the middle of the storyline, and it's a big storyline to jumpstart his career. And I think that was also a big factor in all this.
Right, of course. And that was the biggest.
I always thought Ray was staying with WWE, even though, you know, AEW obviously would love to have him.
Dave, thank you for this week. The Observer, what's coming up?
Who knows? But, you know, I will say that there are aspects to the ratings that are more interesting and more important, you know, in the last week than ever before. Because what we are seeing, we're seeing a pattern of WWE declines and AEW actual increases in key numbers. And so one's going down and one is going up. And these lines, if things continue, well, in theory, the lines intersect, of course. You know, and then one all of a sudden is more popular than the other. In 18 to 34, the line intersected this week. AEW beat Raw and SmackDown in overall 18 to 34. It's one demo. In the other demos, the lines still have not intersected, but they are both going in that similar direction. Things are changing much faster. You know, I would have thought that, you know, 3-4 years this could happen.
Sure.
You know, WWE's got so many advantages, plus AEW is going head to head with NXT.
Yeah.
It's starting to happen right now, and I don't know that people realize it, but this is a giant story. It's already starting to happen. I mean, this week could be a fluke, but I don't think so. It's been, if it came out of nowhere, it'd be one thing, but if you look at the chart and look at the graphs, there's been 5 months where this day was going to come, and you know, it was probably going to come March of next year, except WWE fell so much faster, so it came this week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at what they're putting on TV. You can tell why they're falling.
That's the other thing is it's pretty clear one show is superior to the other.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Some people are. I mean, it's at least with the under 50 audience, you can't even make the argument that that's not the case. You know, it's just that's the taste of the public right now, and you gotta pay. That's another thing. You gotta pay attention to the taste of the public. You can't be making excuses, and some people are making a lot of excuses right now rather than paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, AEW is surviving and actually doing well despite the pandemic. And I can only imagine what they'd be doing if they had crowds and how much better this product and these debuts would have been.
And if they didn't have head-to-head competition.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that as well.
Because that's probably taking 20% off,
yep.
So it's going to take 20% longer for those lines to intersect. That's where the 1834 story is so huge. Mm-hmm. Is you got Raw with no competition, got SmackDown with no competition, and AEW with competition, and AEW's already beating them 18 to 34, and they're close with teenagers, and they're not close in the other groups, but the line, like I said, the lines are intersecting, and if they keep going at this rate, 35 to 49 will be the next domino to fall. It will not be soon, but I would have said that about 18 to 34,
right.
And it was.
Yep, yep.
50 plus will not happen because it will, you know, I don't think it will ever happen.
Yeah, I get that.
I don't say ever, but not for years.
Yep.
But that's, you know, that's the thing to watch is the trends in this business, and the trends in this business are marketable. I mean, market, so to speak.
Fascinating, Dave. Look forward to that, and we'll chat with you next week at this same time. Thank you very much.
Okay, have a great week.
You too. Dave Meltzer, WrestlingObserver.com is where you can find that story and all the news in the world of pro wrestling. We thank him for being on this show each and every week. When we come back, we're going to do a little bit of trivia. A birthday bliss edition of Turnbuckle Trivia is next, and then RJ City. A lot's to come, and a whole nother hour after that. Sunday night's main event. Find us online on our new website, redesigned about a month ago. If you haven't checked it out, sundaynightsmainevent.com. And now, to a break we go, and back with more.
If you like Dave Meltzer interview segments, you'll love WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is your place for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Subscribers have access to hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter, plus daily podcasts, including a library of over 9,000 shows dating back to 2005. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
It's time for
one-on-one and get it done. Sunday night's main event presents...
Everybody hands go up!
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there! And they say yeah! And they say there!
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. It is Turnbuckle Trivia time on the show today. And it's a bit of a special time. Because we have a first-timer, and that doesn't happen all that often. But Rodney is on the line from Toronto. Rodney, welcome to Turnbuckle Trivia. How's your confidence level?
I say it's at a medium now that I know I'm Jason Paul.
Okay, I told you before the show, before we started recording, yeah, what a way to introduce someone. You are playing Paul from the UK, who does very well in these. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. It's good to hear some new blood.
You're just feasting on fresh meat. Well, listen, you don't know what Rodney's like. You have no idea. Rodney might be a ringer. And Rodney, listen, I think everyone out there is rooting for you right now. So you ready to get going, Rodney?
Let's do this.
All right. Paul knows how it works. You guys know how it works. It's straight up trivia today. Five questions each. Whoever does better gets the win. The win involves winning a T-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com of your choice delivered to your door. Rodney, you're player one. First question. Oh, by the way, today's topic, happy 29th birthday, Alexa Bliss. Rodney, what is her real name?
I have no clue.
Oh, not a good start, pal. It is Lexi Kaufman. Next up, Paul.
Oh, no steals then.
Bliss, no steals, Paul. No steals in flat trivia. Bliss started her NXT career as a pixie character. What was the name of her finisher initially called?
Oh, Sparkle Splash.
That is correct, Paul. The Sparkle Splash. All right, Rodney, over to you. Alexa would turn heel in NXT. Upon her alliance with what tag team, Rodney?
Buddy and Blake.
Yeah, that's good enough for me. He still had a first name back then. Buddy Murphy, Wesley Blake, you got it. The Dubstep Cowboys, for those of you that used to listen to What's Next. I would have actually accepted that. Hey, Paul, back to you for this one. Now, while managing Blake and Murphy, Alexa often dressed resembling what famous horror movie icon?
Freddy Krueger.
That's correct. Freddy Krueger, complete with the creepy glove type thing as well. All right, Rodney, back to you. Bliss would be called up to the SmackDown brand and win her first championship at TLC 2016. Who did she defeat for that first championship?
Bayley?
It was not. It was Becky Lynch that she defeated. Paul, you can jump up here if you manage to get this. This is my favorite question of this particular game. After winning the title, Alexa would form an alliance with Mickey James. They'd eventually break up and feud, in which the WWE would try to get Mickey to call Alexa what name that the crowd rejected. What name?
Do you know what? I can't remember.
Ah.
I can't remember.
So you're giving up?
Go on.
The correct answer is Biscuit Butt. They tried to get Biscuit Butt over as a chant.
I would not have done that either.
Like, honestly, though, why is that a bad thing? Why is that possibly a bad thing? I never understood. Okay, moving along. Hey, it's 2-1 right now. So, Rodney, you can tie it here. What terrible name, Rodney, did Braun and Alexa give their tag team in the Mixed Match Challenge?
Little Big?
You got it. Team Little Big. Very good. Now, Paul, back to you. Alexa, as mentioned, she's actually a two-time SmackDown Women's Champion. Both times she lost the title to the same person. Who was it?
Naomi.
You knew that flat out. I thought that was a hard question, but you got it. So that means, Rodney, it's 3-2. You need this to stay in the game, but I guarantee, Rodney, you remember this segment. Bliss would move to Raw. Challenging for the title, she feuded with Bayley. She was involved in one of the worst in-ring segments of the year. It took place on May 29, 2017. Rodney, what was that segment?
Bayley, this is your life.
Yeah, and it was absolutely atrocious. Paul, you can still get the win here. But Paul, I'd say you are a loyal listener to this show. You've got a shot. But this is a tough question. In 2020, a song called Alexa Bliss was released by what band? Oh, my goodness. All right, fine. Make it seem so easy. I thought it was a tough one. Bowling for Soup is the correct answer. Very good. Rodney, it's a tough game to come into and play Paul. He is very good at this. He beat you 4-3. You put up a valiant effort. Thank you for playing, Rodney. And Paul, another T-shirt to add to your collection. Do you know what you want?
I'm going to do Rodney a solid. I will let him have the T-shirt.
You're going to give Rodney the T-shirt?
Yep.
That is very nice of you. Rodney,
wow,
it's your T-shirt. Do you know what you want, Rodney?
No, I don't. I need to cruise the site.
Cruise the site. It's ProWrestlingTees.com. Gentlemen, thank you for playing today's game.
Thanks, Jay, and thanks, Paul.
No problem.
Very nice of Paul from the UK to donate the prize there over to Rodney. Now, I will say, I've mentioned it before, if you're not on the list yet to play Turnbuckle Trivia, now is the time to get on it. A whole new round begins in September. We go through everybody one more time, the tournament in January, but September, October, November, December, all not new players, but another round of it. So you got to be a patron. So sign up patreon.com/SNMEradio and click on the Turnbuckle Trivia level in order to get on and test your knowledge and hope you don't drop Paul. We're going to take a break. Come on back. Coming up next, RJ City joins me right here, Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. Right now, you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, and you're hearing this ad. Yep, it's a commercial. And it could be your commercial. We've got sponsorship packages available to suit any budget, so I could be talking about what you're selling. For more information, email me, jason@snmeradio.com. Get the message out about your product or service to thousands of listeners via TSN Radio and around the world with our podcast. It all starts with an email to jason@snmeradio.com.
If you like wrestling, then your friends probably do too. And there's no better gift for a friend than a sweet wrestling t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com.
The Festival of Friendship!
From Ring of Honor, New Japan, and the Independents.
Super Kick!
To classic superstars like Shawn Michaels, Andre the Giant, and the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
The cream of the crop!
Find the perfect gift for the wrestling fan in your life at ProWrestlingTees.com.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. My next guest is a gentleman of whom I'm very biased and wearing his shirt literally as I conduct this interview because, let's face it, friends, he's not wrestling. If you ever considered what he did, wrestling. He may be or may not be wrestling at Destiny Wrestling's, their big summer barbecue that they're having on August the 16th. We'll get more info on that. We'll also get more info on his Twitter habits. RJ City, welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event.
Thank you. And you really are unfortunately in the middle of my Venn diagram.
Explain this to me, okay?
Well, the one circle would be wrestling, yeah. And the other circle would be old, obscure celebrities and pop culture.
Because I will on occasion cover both of them. We've had some real great pandemic time when you were guesting on my Late Shift show where we just talked about, you know, old dead celebrities. Maybe we should do that same type of thing, but we just profile like old dead wrestlers that had celebrity connections, and Nick Bockwinkel would have to be number one.
Well, I'm working on a new series for my YouTube where called, and this is already trademarked, so I don't steal it.
All right.
The Hollywood Squared Circle.
Oh, man. I love this.
Where I review wrestling-themed episodes of TV shows.
That is fantastic. You know, Lavransky and I actually used to do an audio show called The Squared Circle of Rock, where he would do all wrestling music stuff way back. We're talking like the year 2000. Crazy. But yeah. I like that. The Hollywood Squared Circle. When is this happening and how do I find it?
It'll probably take me a month. I'm researching it. I have a long list. I think I'm going to start with an episode of the old George Reeves Superman.
Oh, well, who was on that?
Well, no one. It's just about wrestling.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought maybe that there was a wrestling cameo or something like that that was thrown into the mix there.
No, there was no cameo. There's also an episode of Night Court I'm looking at.
There's an episode.
And lest we forget, a wonderful Family Matters episode where Carl and Steve took on the Bushwhackers.
I do remember that. Along with that, you got to throw into the mix for a little bit newer. We have Fuller House, which, of course, I think Christopher Daniels put on a hood for that, did he not?
Yes, and we also have a harrowing episode of Mama's Family.
What?
I'm really excited to dig into.
Who is in that?
Well, Vicki Lawrence.
Yeah, no. But I mean, like, was there a wrestler that made a cameo as well?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look up and dig and say, who were those people? They're usually under masks as just, like, wrestlers. Also, Blue Meanie, I was talking to him about it, and he directed me to an episode of a show he was on. Do you remember the show called Nikki with Nikki Cox? It was a 90s sitcom.
Nikki Cox. No, I don't at all.
Well, it's, it's a show. And he was on it, and we're going to cover it.
Well, there's also the Lyle Alzado show that was up here, right? That wasn't it filmed up here and featured a bunch of wrestlers on it. And he was like, it was basically the Big Show show, the theme was very similar to the original version. It was called, where is it here?
Learning the Ropes.
Learning the Ropes. Yes, that's it. Very good.
Yeah. So,
well, I'm looking forward to this. As you can see, you've piqued my interest.
Yes. Thank you.
So this is what you've been doing for the pandemic, you've just been hanging out doing YouTube videos.
Yep. Pretty much, the odd hammerlock to just keep myself on top of my form.
You have, however, caused some wakes in the wrestling world as far as Twitter goes, because, wrestling is one of the few places that Twitter's still relevant, that and in Trump's world. And both Randy Orton and Steve Austin have sent out tweets that have involved you. Let's start with Randy Orton. What's going on? Because this just started popping up on my feed, and anytime something pops up with you, people ask me to interview you about what's happening.
Yeah. Well, he followed me, I'd probably say 6 months ago, and liked my tweets. I do not have a relationship with him. I've never met him. I do know that his grandfather, Bob Orton Sr., went to school with Ed Asner. So the family holds a special place in my heart.
Okay. But what was the original? Because you ended up going with the back and forth with Orton, did you not?
Yeah. So I was tweeting about, there's all these indie wrestling video games now that are coming out, and they're like forever in development. Okay. And they're trying to like corner indie guys into making deals with them that don't seem that much on the level. Mm-hmm. So I tweeted about them.
So like the rest of the business.
Yeah. What else is new? And something about, when are these people going to pay me a fair price for my rights instead of all these other bloated people on their roster? And at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I woke up at 7 and then realized he quoted the tweet at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I don't know what his hours are, asking if I thought that he was bloated. And it went from there. I'm certainly not one who is lacking in response. And mm-hmm. we basically spent the whole day responding to each other. And Matt Cardona got in on it because he was upset that I did the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast and that Randy didn't.
Okay.
And we went quite back and forth. And then he tried to rope me into making fun of AJ Styles being a flat earther.
Right, yep.
He was trying to weaponize me to fight his battles. And I said, kid, your tweets are all over the place. You have to slow down, get some better psychology, take your time and tell a story. So I was happy to give him a little bit of advice.
I do think that there's something to that. I mean, you're someone who has utilized social media effectively, and really social media, I mean, even before what we've seen this year, has been troublesome for many wrestlers. Have you ever thought of starting a social media school for pro wrestlers?
Yes, but unfortunately, my first lesson would be stop pro wrestling. So I think it would be a very short lesson plan.
What happened with Austin? I mean, I know you guys you've been on the Steve Austin podcast. It was a very entertaining episode. He seemed to be delighted by your ridiculous references. But what's going on with you and Austin now?
Well, when me and David Arquette went on the show, I brought him my pin, which has my catchphrase. And we also brought him a cherry pie because we were his guests, And on the podcast, if you want to go back and listen to it, he explicitly says, I'm going to give you guys my hat. So I was excited to, not the one on his head, but he has hats, you know, Broken Skull, IPA, whatever the hat is.
Sure.
And the end of the episode, we ended up leaving and we got in the car and I said, David, we didn't get a hat.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I was a little affronted. I had a little bit of a grudge there. Felt like it was one of those hat Ponzi schemes on the podcast. He says, we'll just give away stuff. And then he's like, goodbye. I was upset about that, but we spoke about that. We tweeted a little back and forth, but then he said to me, he responded to one of my tweets. I don't know if he's just scrolling Twitter at 11:30 at night, lying on his back in bed. And it was something self-deprecating. And then he said to me, don't sell yourself short, kid. You have one of the best sunset flips in the business.
Okay. That's,
to which I replied, kick, wham, sunset flip.
Wow.
So I'm excited when I get back to the Indies to start using that as my finish.
As your finish, the sunset flip finisher.
Yep. Austin said it was good. It's got to be good.
I love it. Now, you know, you've come up on this show many a time. In particular, we've been, of course, with this show, following along with the world of pro wrestling. WWE's a mess. AEW is doing some fun stuff. That's generally how it's been. And I have seen indie quote-unquote stars march out every second week on AEW for Cody's open challenge for the TNT title. My proposal that I want to run by you, RJ, is you answer the challenge, but also at the same time refuse to wrestle.
Well, this is my thing. And you know what? If it works for other people like Warhorse, good for him. I like him. Excellent guy. Very rah-rah. Support me. Let's do this. He basically launched a campaign, which was incredibly effective because he was on and it was wonderful.
Yeah, for sure.
Me, that's not really my bag. Similar to the video game scenario, I feel like I need to have a fair price for my level of, talent and looks and ingenue that I would bring to the program. So I would at least say, it's an open challenge, but I want something out of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
I want, at least as you know, I ask that they give me a Cobb salad and catering.
Mm-hmm. Is that tough to come by?
Sorry?
Is that tough to come by?
Well, it's not an easy ask for a salad. It's not a side salad.
No.
There's a hard-boiled egg, there's bacon in it, there's turkey, there's cheese. It's really a meal, to be honest with you. And that's, I don't even know if I want to eat the salad, because it'll probably bloat me before the show. But it's a gesture from them to say, we value you. We know this is a difficult salad. We put it together for you. So, if the people at TNT, or whoever is involved, Cody, Tony, so on and so forth. Also, my other question is, I got very excited because I thought Tony was related to Madeline Kahn.
Yeah, no, that's different.
Yeah, it's a different Kahn. So I was a little disappointed on that front.
Mm-hmm.
I was all, sign me up, let's do this. And I was like, oh, it's a different con, there's no relation. So that was slightly dejecting for me, but, I have a list of demands. Should they give in? Great. If not, I'll be on Twitter.
Well, along with that, you will be at Destiny Wrestling on August the 16th, but it's up in the air whether you're going to be wrestling at this event. Now, for me, I would throw that out there as a general statement when you appear at anything.
Yeah, I like to question the definition of wrestling when I wrestle.
So,
you ever go to the Guggenheim and you see a urinal that's gold leaf or something and you go, why is this art? Why is this here? I think that's the questions I want people to have when I wrestle. But yes, I don't know if I'm going to wrestle, mainly because they don't know.
Right.
For the first time in history. Because it's, a weird, this is like the first show back in Ontario. It's definitely a outdoor barbecue gathering type thing. That is definitely what we know. I will be certainly making an appearance. I will be speaking on a microphone. However, I also do that when I wrestle.
That is true. Yeah, that comes part and parcel with you. David Arquette has put out the documentary. We had him on a long time ago on this show with your help, because you were you appear in the documentary. You've been David Arquette's tag partner. What's the status of the doc, and when can people see it?
It should be out by the end of the month. This month, I guess, being August. So I guess it's a early fall release, as they say in the business.
But,
it'll be fun and interesting. He always said this is his love letter to wrestling. And my response was, well, then you have very sloppy penmanship.
Okay, so it's something to look forward to. You were telling me, though, I mean, you do spend a lot of time with David. How much of what he was doing, because, you know, you follow him on Twitter, you know, he was out wrestling so much. How much of the wrestling aspect here is actually in the dock? He seemed to be out there far more than required.
I honestly think 20% of all the wrestling he did got actually into the documentary.
So why is he out working indies?
He honestly fell in love with indie wrestling and taking this seriously and really wanting to earn the fans' respect. He was very bothered by the backlash from WCW, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, people making decisions, it wasn't him, it wasn't really his fault. However, he was the face of it and he always bore the brunt of it. So he really did take it seriously. And he was like, let's go, like, hook me up on whatever shows. And I'm like, all right, here's a list of shows. And he would do them. And I would assume that it would be for the documentary. But then just himself would show up. And I'd say, where's the crew? Is anyone filming this? And he said, no, like, we're doing this to wrestle. Incredibly generous and kind to everybody in the back. And the fans would always, you know, sit and sign autographs and take pictures and stuff. That stuff was important that he gives back to wrestling because he was genuinely a fan and he still is, even when he's in the middle of the match, unfortunately.
So, I mean, RJ, you know, we're still, despite stage three, where you and I both are in Toronto, we still are in a bit of a pandemic. What do you see happening with indie shows? Because, you know, wrestling as it is, indie wrestling is already tough to make a buck on for both the performers and promoters. And now with all of these social distancing rules put in place, it's going to be really tough for anyone to do anything out there, I'd say, in this industry.
Well, let me put it like this. I'm pretty sure I've made more money not wrestling. I think this has actually worked out to my advantage. Indie wrestling is very hard financially, viability as a business for the wrestlers, and obviously even more so for the promoters. What I'm interested in is just what the general mood is going to be with the crowd and what they want to see and what they don't. It's been a huge break. The wrestling on TV is, you know, not the wrestling we're used to either. You know, nothing is the same at all. And, you know, as when we do comedy shows and when we do wrestling shows, sometimes you get there and you feel something in the air that indicates the crowd is in a certain mood. You know,
yeah.
Maybe you'll throw out one kind of joke and they'll go for it or they won't. You'll say, okay, this is what they're in the mood for tonight. With these shows, not only, you know, being social distance with the measures in place, I always feel like that will affect a crowd. Anytime I've been in, like, you know, there's indie bookers who want to book a stadium of 5,000 seats and then like 300 people will be there and they're all spread out. So no one will actually cheer together. You know what I mean? You'll just hear a smattering all over the place. I feel like that will be, the crowd will be very dispersed. So it'll be weird. It'll be interesting to be like, how can you work a crowd like this? And also, with all these masks on, I don't know who is booing me.
Yeah, that is tough. Hey, speaking of masks, though, what is the most notable, I will say, mask that one RJ City wears?
Oh, there was a wonderful artist named Jeff Braun, who you should follow on Instagram because he is in your milieu. He made these... Faith, they're like a scarf, basically, but then you pull it over your face, almost like a bandana.
Yep, yep.
And it's a pattern of Charles Nelson Reilly's face.
Of course it is.
Yeah. So, and he also made another one of Paul Lynn's face, which, of course, I sent to David. So maybe when we start teaming again, we could be a really eccentric pair of train robbers.
With Paul
with
Lynn
these bandanas
and Charles Nelson Reilly on your faces.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
RJ, always a delight chatting with you. I wish you all the best, not wrestling.
Thank you. So far, so good.
Of course, you can find RJ City with all this social media stuff that we talked about on Twitter at RJCity1, Instagram at RJCity, and on YouTube where he does all these ridiculous things. RJ City loves you. Just look him up and you can find him. The most creative pro wrestler not on television right now. Still don't understand why. I know I'm biased because I was on TV with them on Splat-A-Lot, but I still don't get it. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We've got a whole nother hour of the show here, an expanded hour if you're a patron, and it's myself and Joe Aguinaldo taking a look back at just a very bizarre week in wrestling television, and not in a good way. We'll discuss it, we'll break it down, and Joe will bring some positivity to the end of the hour as well. Stick with us, Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old folks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty farts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old folks, tough guy.
Corey, what on earth is going on here? Oh my God! They got weapons. Is that retribution?
Gotta be. We saw him Monday night causing all kind of chaos. Now they're in the building. Who the hell let him in?
The hell are they doing? They've taken over the ring.
Got bats and pipes. They're doing whatever the hell they want.
Welcome back. It is hour two of Sunday night's main event. I am now joined by one of the hosts of the All Elite Weekly podcast, which is one of our Patreon podcasts. Joe Aguinaldo joins me. I think a lot of people, Joe, probably thought it was Lavransky this week simply because the return of Shane McMahon. Everyone knows Dan loves Shane.
Oh, absolutely. He loves Shane.
Listen, you know, Joe, you and I actually had the chance to do the AEW All Elite Weekly show because Lavransky is away this week. So we, and pretty much that means we talked about all the good stuff because this week was weird and weird, not in a good way.
No, not at all. I mean, I try to be, you know, somewhat open and positive about, you know, the wrestling product in general.
You're a shining ray of sunshine for the most part. I agree.
But man, this week was rough. It was really hard, especially SmackDown. Oh my God, what was that?
Well, I was planning on starting this podcast today and maybe doing some NXT stuff, maybe talking Deadly Draw. I don't know. But when I saw SmackDown, when I saw the end of SmackDown, Joe, this is an embarrassment to be on television as a major company putting whatever that end segment was on TV.
Yeah, that was not like, okay, I know we're going to talk about it a little later, but up until that point, I thought Raw Underground was the worst thing I had seen on my television until I saw this. Like, Retribution came out, and I'll admit, for about maybe 5 seconds, I'm like, oh, well, this is okay. Let's see where this goes. And then right after that, it was like, what is this stupidity? What am I watching? You know, like, you know, these guys coming out, or these people coming out, because I know there were some women in there. So let's just say these wrestlers coming out, you know, in the hoodies and stuff and with the baseball bats. And I was just like, really? Like, what is this? Number one. Number two, like, I remember, just from a logic perspective, and I know it's pro wrestling, but I'm going to just put this out there. I remember when NXT invaded SmackDown, at least some of the SmackDown people came out and tried to stop them. You know what I mean? And there were only five people. So to watch these five, like, you know, chase off Graves and Cole, and then, you know, sort of beat up some of the, like, the recruits. I was just like, yeah, this is not, it was really bad. And I was like, this is the best that the WWE creative could come up with. Even after a quarterly call where they got sort of called out about bad ratings, that was the best they could do. Really? Wow.
So it's an invasion angle. And the funny thing is, I had forgotten about that NXT invasion to SmackDown. That was my favorite show of the year last year. I loved it.
It was amazing.
It was it was WWE. Their backs against the wall, forced into a corner, and it was a pretty magical night. And if you go back, Joe, the one before that stands out in my head was, again, one of my favorite moments. It was the it was the Nexus invasion of Raw. And when they tore up the ring, when Daniel Bryan did the choke and got himself suspended, it was tremendous. I remember watching it three times over because I enjoyed it so much. Again, I get the tingles just thinking about how great it is. Before that, Joe, let me throw this at you. The ECW invasion. And I'm not talking the original Raw one. I'm talking, I believe it was on SmackDown, when all of a sudden they're in the ring and you realize all of these guys turn around and you realize that they're all ECW guys that were in the ring together by chance and they form a united front. Now, it was ruined very quickly by Stephanie McMahon thereafter, but this was none of that. This was casting these performers who we don't know in the worst light possible. Joe, I don't even understand how they managed to shoot this and make them look so pathetically small. Did they not kind of look like children to you?
Actually, while I was watching this, now look, I'm an Asian dude. I'm not the tallest dude in the world. Okay. I'll admit it. But like when they ran out, I was like, wow, like all of those people are short.
They're
like,
tiny.
Are they what? 5 feet? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like if Sheamus came out, he would probably tower over all of them. You know, so yeah, it was like, so you have these, again, they just didn't look very imposing other than the fact that they had baseball bats.
Joe, don't forget they managed to pull Terry Funk out of retirement because clearly yeah. Chainsaw Charlie was in that damn ring as well.
That was
awful.
I try to be positive. I could not think of one thing that I liked about that whole entire segment. And on top of that, it went way too long.
Oh, yeah.
Like after about the 2 minute mark, I was kind of expecting the watermark to come up and then they would just go off air or whatever. No, it just kept going and going. And it was like, what is this? That was horrible.
Everything about what we've seen from Retribution, complete with the way the name was, I believe, accidentally leaked by WWE social media. And then the first time, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the first time I remember hearing the Retribution name on television was during the Dirt Sheet when the mic cut out. And I believe it was Miz who said, hey, Retribution, you're not booked on the show tonight. You're on Raw. Ha ha ha. You've already.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
You've already used the name as a joke before the debut of the faction.
Yeah, I don't understand where they were going with this. And it was like even with Miz's comment about that. Let me just segue into that real quick.
Sure.
That whole Dirt Sheet segment sucked like with Mandy's hair or whatever. I was, oh my God. Anyways, but yeah, like what are you doing spoiling it? And I could have sworn Corey Graves made mention of it too.
Might have.
Cause I do remember him saying something I remember him saying the word retribution and thinking, wait a minute. Just not really well executed. I mean, I like the invasion angles that we've just talked about, like
sure.
the Nexus one, the ECW, NXT, obviously that was a really good one. Everyone loved that one. But like, so I'm cool with invasion angles, but this one execution wise was horrible.
It's really fascinating to see, and I may disprove this fact a little bit later in the show, but the way that WWE pulls from history and utilizes different tropes of the industry, like the invasion angle, and what they continually go back to, and how they manage to ruin all of these things, where in general, and maybe Deadly Draw aside, when AEW goes back and try to do these things, they pay an homage to what used to be and take some of these concepts and do well with them.
Yeah, you know what? Like even when like let's just use really quickly Mox versus Darby Allin, they did a callback to the match like that those they both had back in November when Mox hit that rear naked choke on Allin. So yeah, like for whatever reason, like AEW seems to be able to, you know, do a callback well. Whereas sometimes the WWE, like on on paper, it looks good, like the invasion angle, but whenever they do it, it's like, oh my God, what are you guys doing? Like even the WCW invasion, they had it ready to go. And yeah, that just never, that never amounted to anything either.
The WCW invasion failed because there was a couple of reasons. Number one, they didn't have the right person to lead the charge. And number two, there is an unwillingness to let WWE look secondary to WCW. And the goal with an invasion, much like NWO, which, you know, when they invaded WCW, they became the stronger of the two factions and the cool faction, so much so to a fault. All right, so this angle was horrendous. But what did you think going back to Monday night? Like, WWE is just completely out of sorts here. We talked about it with Meltzer in the first hour. It's a mess. What did you think of Raw Underground?
Man, okay, so number one, my immediate thought was it's basically a wrestling match in a, like, the first segment, it's a wrestling match in a ring without ropes, all right? I'll admit, as they move forward with the segments, the quote-unquote shoot fighting aspect of it got a little bit better. But as a UFC fan, I was like, really, if you're gonna do a work shoot, go watch some old school, like, you know, late 80s, early 90s UWF from Japan, because that stuff looked like a work shoot. If they had done something like that, okay, I'm cool with it. But watching it, it was just really weird to see, like that aspect, the underground, you know, fight club. And again, until Friday, that was like, this is really dumb. That was my initial thought. After Friday, I was like, oh, I guess that wasn't so bad. So I guess that's a good thing. Anyways, and then there was like the other part about it too, and is when the Hurt Business came in and sort of took over everything. Like, I guess my question is, and I know it's only been a week or whatever, but my question is, what's the eventual outcome of this? Like, where does the story go? Because what are you going to do? You're going to have a merging of Raw and Raw Underground where the Hurt Business, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, this doesn't make sense to me. And then on top of that, now, like, let me segue into the Hurt Business here. I like MVP, but I thought the whole idea behind MVP was to elevate Bobby Lashley, and he has taken a complete backseat to MVP.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Though, I mean, I do think at the end, I can't believe we're analyzing Raw Underground matches, but at the end, you did see MVP Lashley come in and destroy someone of a notable stature, where MVP picked the smallest guy in the room to beat up. So you do see that dynamic being played out, where clearly Lashley is the monster, Lashley is the star. But Raw Underground, one of my main issues with it, and again, it's about pulling from the past, and it's not... See, WWE tries to take... They don't just take concepts. They try to take the look and the feel from the past as well, because I'm watching this with Shane there and with the dancing girls, you know, and I'm just like, where is your brain? This is 1997. Guys, that was 23 years ago. We got to move on. That doesn't work anymore. That doesn't work at all. They are trying to recreate that ECW Dirty Attitude era vibe, and it just doesn't work for the modern day. It's not what I want to see on Monday nights. And I mean, getting into what does and does not make sense, because I agree with you. I completely do not understand how these two things merge. And on top of that, if Shane is doing this, why was he just okay with MVP, Lashley, and Benjamin walking in and saying they're the bosses now?
Yeah, like, again, there was a lot of, let's say, a lot of holes in this. And I'll admit, there's a weird part of me that's interested in seeing how they extricate themselves from this. But for the most part, just watching it, I was just like, wow, this is not... Well, it's just not good. It's, you know, I'm trying to be positive here. I just can't. Again, I'm going to come back to this whole shoot aspect, man. Like, even watching, I think Dolph Ziggler was in there one time.
Yes, he
right?
was.
And I know he's a legit, like, you know, he's a legit fighter. Like, he's got
wrestler,
a wrestling
yep.
background.
Yep.
So watching him do some of the, you know, some of the suplexes was cool. And then he started doing work punches, and I'm like, oh my God, that's horrible. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't know what else to say about Raw Underground other than it was bad.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Let's go back to SmackDown here. There is a detailed breakdown of Monday Night Raw that myself and Mark Andrada have done. If you're a patron, you got it. It's called the Midweek Markout. Comes out on Tuesdays. Now, Joe, going back to SmackDown here, and listen, I don't know if everyone noticed this, but I definitely did. The Sasha and Bayley segment was cut together clearly without Stephanie there. And I don't mean that the fact that she was on video screen. She wasn't even on video screen. That was put in afterwards. It was clear by the way it was shot. That was green screened in. It's just a clear indication that they weren't ready. They couldn't get Steph's visuals. So clearly they shot Sasha and Bayley first and then put Steph in afterwards. And the only thing interesting coming out of this, and let me throw this question at you, perhaps we can end this bit of SmackDown chat on a positive note. Next week, Bayley will be competing at SummerSlam against the winner of a tri-branded battle royal on SmackDown. Who wins that?
Oh, man. It's a good question.
Well, if it's a tri-branded battle royal, I feel as though that opens the door for someone not on the brand to win, of course, right? Is it time for someone from NXT to come up and challenge here?
I mean, I would love to say Rhea Ripley, but like, given what's going on with her right now, I just don't see it happening. Like, you know what I mean?
You know, Joe, if they'd kept her off TV, that would have been the perfect person.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you know, I know we're going to kind of briefly touch on it. She had that number one contender match with Dakota Kai this week.
Yep.
And she lost.
Oh, yeah. So
I'm like, well, like, what the hell, right?
Yeah, well, let's do that. Let's leave on this questionably positive note from SmackDown. We'll come back. We'll talk about NXT and what happened there, because even the booking on NXT is very, very strange. So we will do that next. It's Sunday night's main event. You're listening to it on TSN Radio. Thanks for listening to the free version of Sunday night's main event. There's actually lots more of this, and you can get it commercial free, and you can get an extended version. But you just got to drop in and be a supporter on our Patreon. It's only $4 a month, and you get this show plus... you also get 4 other podcasts per week. So find us and go support at patreon.com/SNMEradio. Yep, patreon.com/SNMEradio. Because without you, this show doesn't exist. patreon.com/SNMEradio. We appreciate your support.